You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And here we go. Line ball to start this game.
Jeremy Loblotsky and John Morasty teeing off on one another.
And Toporowski is just pounding away at Robinson. We said Toporowski, this is a guy who set a Western Hockey League record for 505 penalty minutes.
Let's call it like it is. Toporowski's a boon.
Getting closer. He reaches in a right. He's out. John Gripson. He's just fought. Stu Gripson. Oh, my goodness. Scott Parker for the KO of Stu Gripson.
This is one of the best hockey fights we have seen in a long time.
Vandenbush tells the linesman, get the heck out of my kitchen.
Ray Victor, he absolutely decked Jim Crane with a wild right.
A sheer stagger by a big left hand by Wade Bieland.
Chris Nyland on a penalty shot. Scores!
Bugard down the wing. Bugard palms away. Score!
Montreal, number 47 for Boston. Those guys, 5 minutes each for fighting!
All right, here tonight on the Five for Fighting podcast, back in the swing of things after I've been gone for about a month, we have a guy who really came on my radar early in terms of the fighting and, you know, being the tough guy role and really loves to hype up the crowd, and that is one Mr. Cole Frazier of the Toledo Walleye. Cole, how you doing tonight, man?
Good, how are you?
Good. I appreciate you taking the time to come onto the podcast and talk some hockey and, you know, get your take on everything in your first year in Toledo.
Yeah, of course. I mean, my first year in Toledo was one to remember for sure. I mean, my ECHL career was a little bit tougher than most. My first year ended up being COVID year, so got canceled halfway through the year. And then going into the season after that, it was kind of more of a just, you know, 13 teams playing in the league, just trying to find a place to play here, there, basically everywhere. I played for three teams, and then I found a full-time home last year, and you know, that really sat at home because it was one of those first full years with a team organization that had given me a chance to play, and you know, it was a great group of guys, and we made a long run but came up just a little bit short, but it was a great season, and I love that place. That's why I'm going back next year.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know, before we kind of get into your ECHL career, I always like to ask the guys. So you were born in Ottawa, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
So were you a typical Canadian kid? You start off, like, as soon as you could walk, you're on skates, or were you a late bloomer at all?
No, as soon as I could basically walk, I was playing. I mean, my parents always said, well, especially my mom, she goes, I think you were playing hockey in my stomach when I was pregnant with you. So it was kind of, I was just kind of running around inside there. But yeah, I've been playing as long as I can remember. And we have some land back home, so my dad would always make an outdoor rink in the winter, so we'd have that going on too.
Oh man, that's the, I'm always jealous of that because, you know, I love playing hockey. I'm terrible at it though. You know, I'm D-League bender, but I would love to sit there, just be able to go out in the backyard and play hockey.
Yeah. My dad had the street lights, like those big industrial street lights for late night hockey. We played till the early hours in the morning, especially on Christmas and New Year's. Those were two big nights, and we'd have friends over and they'd come out and they'd skate with us. And my sister played a little bit of hockey too, and she ended up stopped playing a few years back, but her and I would go out there and play in the night with my dad too sometimes. So it was a good time.
Right on, man. Well, you actually ended up getting drafted into the OHL. You know, how did that come about for you?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, sorry, I thought you were about to say something. Yeah. So was it kind of something that was a goal of yours from early on, just to kind of excel, or were you just kind of having fun and then somebody? Because I've talked to guys before where they're like, out of nowhere, you know, the Dub or the OHL came out and they're like, yeah, you want to come to camp? And they're like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, well, in Ottawa, in that area, there's a camp, or there's a league called the CCHL, which is just Tier 1 Junior A. And they kind of do like a protections thing and draft and everything a year before the OHL. So they give you that chance to go play there, and then obviously take that road and go to school. But, you know, I was protected by them. And then I got the call saying that I was drafted to the Petes in the third round. They wanted me to come up for a press conference on that day. And it was only 2 hours, 2.5 hours to the rink from my front door. So I was like, let's go. So we went up there, and they ended up giving me a contract in April of that year, kind of just after the draft. And they were like, you can come play next year, and so on. So I signed there, and I mean, my junior career was a little bit tough, just in ways of being in a spot that was, I mean, I definitely produced my second year. My first year was a little bit tougher, just a lot of moving parts in that aspect. And then kind of going from solidifying myself as like that tough guy. And, you know, you don't always want to be put in the role of a tough guy. Because you can play, like, I know myself, I can play the game. I mean, I play forward for 11 years. I'm versatile. I can do all that sort of stuff. And I can definitely throw down when I need to. And so going into junior career, it was kind of tough because the OHL dropped their fight count down to 3. So I couldn't really do that. So that's kind of why I left early. I didn't play my overage year, and I just went straight to the coast. But my junior career was... Second year, we made a nice run for it, went to the conference final. And then the years after that, we were kind of just, you know, bottom feeders, kind of just trying to grind it out and get through the years and everything. But, you know, it made me grow a lot as a person and matured enough to be able to go play pro as a 20-year-old.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And you actually ended up getting drafted by Detroit. You know, what kind of feeling was that for you?
I mean, it was an interesting feeling for sure. My agent, my family, and I, and my went down to the draft is in Chicago that year, and we went to my agent and I actually had just gone to the bathroom. They were like, New Jersey just called a timeout. We got 5 minutes. We can go to the bathroom. So we get there and we walk in and. Going to the bathroom, we start walking out, and then they announced my name, and I came running down the tunnel to see my dad, gave my mom and dad a hug and went down. And it was just a crazy feeling because my captain was hold on, it's off the stop. No, I got good. My two shepherds in here with me.
Oh yeah, thank God. Well, that's part of the reason I haven't been able to podcast in so long. My wife's been traveling for work, and we just got a new German short hair pointer, and he's just balls to the wall all the time. So it's like,
oh yeah,
I can't have him.
Yeah, we got. Yeah, we have a 1-year-old shepherd and a 2-year-old shepherd.
Oh,
yeah. So they're in full force right now. They're ready to go outside and play. But it was kind of cool because my captain in Peterborough, we were both drafted at the same. He was drafted the same year as I was. I was drafted the same year he was, and he ended up getting picked in Detroit in the third round. So he was already up there in the press box. Talking with everyone. So when I got up there, he was like, no way. And it was kind of cool. You got to see a familiar face. And I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah, no, that's sweet, man. And you talk about it before with the OHL, before we get into your ECHL career here, you know, you brought it up with the kind of like finding the groove of the tough guy role. Was that something that started for you in Bantam, or did you kind of, was it, because I know some guys when they get to junior, you're like, okay, I got to stand out, I got to do something, and guys will start fighting a bit more. So was that something that was always part of your game, or did that develop later on?
My first fight was in the OHL. I'd right. never fought before that. So it was kind of just like a heat of the moment thing. I fought a guy named Johnny Cornell. And I remember my parents were actually at that game. My mom hated it because she'd never seen me play before. So she was at the game, and I guess my dad said she hid behind him because she didn't know what it was all about. And, you know, my uncle played in the OHL, used to fight Ty Domi all the time. And his brother played in the NHL and for the Hartford Whalers, and his career came up short a little bit just because of an injury. But, yeah, I mean, it was more of a kind of heat of the moment. I was like, I'm good at this. Like, I can make a run with this and kind of get to the next level with it, hopefully. But also know, like, I can still play the game and produce. So it's kind of like a fine line. Like, you know, there's these guys who can, all they can do is fight, and that's kind of their whole role. But for myself, I like to see myself as a two-way player. I mean, I can play both. I can be that tough enforcer when you need me to, but I can also play the game.
No, and that's it. That's what's so, it's in 2022, it's pretty, very valuable to have that in the game. And I think the game has far surpassed the days of, you know, having the guy that plays those 2 minutes a night and what have you. And I got to ask, so, you know, even though it might not be your sole purpose is just a strictly an enforcer, because obviously, like I said, you have to play the game as well. Do you like the 10 fight rule at all? I ask guys that play in the coast that all the time. Like the 10 fight rule.
I've never maxed it. I think it's a good amount. I think it's enough to show that you are willing to throw down and really willing to do that stuff. But I mean, at the same time, it's also, you're also at that point where it's like you're preserving yourself. I mean, back in the day when guys were fighting 30, 40, 50 times a season, I mean, you look at them now and there's so much going on with your brain and all the information that's coming out with concussions and everything. I mean, it's serious. It's a big problem. But I mean, the 10 fight, I think, is perfect. I mean, for myself, I think I get to like that 7-8 mark every year. But, you know, I find if I were to go higher than that, if I was getting to like the 13, 14, 15, I mean, my hands and my head would just be mangled. I mean, my hands are bad enough as it is just off the 8-fight rule, or just having 8 fights a year.
Right.
But I mean, I think it's a good number. I think it forces people to actually have to be able to play. So it's not just a run around and fight, you know. I mean, fighting's a part of the game. It will always be part of the game, and I'm a firm believer on that. And that's just, I mean, you can't have guys running around taking cheap shots at your skilled players, at your top guys, and not have to answer the bell. But I think the time for fighters going out and fighting each other every single night, I think that part of the game is slowly coming out of it. But the having to stick up for your teammates will never leave it. So I think the 10 fight rule is a good rule.
Right on, man. Yeah. It's funny because I've asked this a couple times, and with fans and other players that I've interviewed, and for the most part, I think it was when I was actually talking with Kyle Newber at one of the events down in Estero. He said, I think it, like, at least be 15 because it's a 72 game season. I think 10 is just a touch too little. Just for it, mm-hmm. depends on, you know, it all depends on who you're asking. And of course, that's just me talking as a fan. From the side over here, I'm not the one throwing down, so of course it doesn't matter what I think. But I've always thought, since it's a 72 game season, I feel like nobody's really fighting 20 times a year anymore, in whatever, regardless of what league. I think 15 should be the max, personally, if you're going to put a rule in. But
I mean, you think about it, guys who do get 15, I mean, they only get suspended for a certain amount, you know,
right?
And I think I think their goal behind it is to stop the head injuries too. And it's not to take fighting out of the game. I think it's just more to preserve the players. Because, right. I mean, you look at all the information now compared to back then when people are fighting every night or fighting 20 times, you know. And you look at them after a season or even after a game. Like, think about how many times those tough, tough guys get hit in the head. Like, I mean, you watch a Kyle Newber versus Travis Howe fight. Those guys aren't small guys.
No.
And they're hitting hard. Every punch is landing. You think about how their head feels after a game. I mean, they got hard heads, but you think about how that's going to feel after a game, or how you think of it after a season, those two fight 3 or 4 times. Think about how they're going to feel after that. But think about if they did it 15 times.
Right.
I mean, I think, I think 15 fights wouldn't be a bad rule, but I also see why they do the 10.
No, absolutely. I see the 10, it's, do I like it? Not really. But I think it's better than what, like, the, like, well, you just said the OHL is 3, and I think the Quebec League, I think it's 1. The
Quebec League's 10. I think the Quebec League's 10.
I thought, unless they changed it. Junior League,
because
it was after they got, like, held, like, the government got involved and said, like, after one fight, it's a suspension or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's a bit, that's over excessive, in my opinion, because then you got cheap shots that are going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, and then you look at the Dub, and the Dub.
Yeah,
they do whatever they want out there. I mean, that would have been my ideal junior league to play in, was there. I mean, I wanted to play there. I mean, I couldn't make it happen, but that would have been my ideal spot to play.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's funny, you know, actually, when I was, because of course I had looked into your stuff and your career. This is really my first year following the ECHL. So of course, I don't know if you see on YouTube, but most of the fights that are from this year are typically posted by myself. And so I was like, oh man, I got to look for this Cole Frazier guy. Like, you know, because I hadn't followed hockey in quite a bit. And so, you know, I was surprised by how young you are. You're 22 years old, correct?
Yeah, I'm 23 next week.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I think, I can't remember if Blatchman's got you beat, but you now might be the youngest person I've ever interviewed, which is funny because normally I always interview guys who are older. But so coming up in the fighting role, I like to ask this for newer guys, like, you know, like Blatchman or yourself. Is there any tough guy that you try to emulate yourself after? Like, you might watch clips of like McGrattan or Probert or something, and you're like, okay, maybe I can do what they're doing to help me out in a fight. Or do you just kind of just go out there and just give it all you got? Excuse me.
I mean, my agency, they represented some pretty tough guys in their day. They represented, Chris Neal, Zach Ronaldo, Kyle Clifford.
There you go.
Guys who can throw down. But, you know, they kind of gave me some tips going up through juniors. And, you know, the big emphasis on it is more just kind of try to, like, play more defense and wait for your opportunities. Because if you go out there swinging, I mean, you're opening yourself up to some pretty intense blows. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I mean, it happened to me in my first year in the coast. It's not a fun feeling, and you learn from it. But it happens, and you try to learn from those things and just use those as more defense learning curves.
Absolutely. Well, we'll dive into your ECHL career here, man. So you're in Allen, and you actually fought, and this dude's tough as nails. You want to talk about a dude who's been doing it for years too, and I couldn't believe he was still playing this year, but you actually ended up fighting Garrett Klotz. I don't know if there's any.
Twice.
I don't know if there's footage out there of it at all, if it's on YouTube or not. But how was it fighting Garrett Klotz, man? He's just been a road warrior in terms of minor pro hockey.
It wasn't fun, to say the least.
Yeah.
But it also wasn't really an option. You know, I had a guy on our team who was not very big. His name was Zane Franklin. He had asked Klotz to square up, and I was right there and I was watching it unfold, and I'm like, okay, this guy's 6'8", 270, 280 pounds, and he's a freak. So, I mean, I got to stand in there. I can stand in there. This guy's not going to be able to stand in there. He's too small. So I was like, well, if I just grab him and try to hold on for dear life, that's the best. I mean, I'm going to consider that a win. I mean, this is a guy who's been doing it for years, fights guys like Westgar. And I'm like, so I drop my stuff and I grab him and I just hung on for dear life. And he almost knocked me out through my helmet. He was punching me on the top of my head and almost put me out. He is out of everyone's weight class. I think the only guy that can really stand in there is probably Noobs, Howe, or McKee. Those are the only guys I think that are in that weight class.
Yeah, man. Klotz is, fuck, man, he's tough. And he's still, like, jacked to the gills, too. And he's just, you know, he's got that. He's been around the block a couple times, so this ain't his first rodeo when he's fighting. And Yeah, I'm curious to see if he comes back next year, but what a wild ride that must have been fighting him.
Yeah, I mean, it happened. I mean, we almost fought on the bench in Rapid City too. I think there's footage of that on Twitter, but he tried. I mean, I was trying to stick up for teammate again, and he came into the bench and we were swinging across the benches. Yeah. I mean, it was like jungle hockey bat. Like when that happened, it was crazy.
Yeah. Like a page right out of Slapshot there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another guy I'll ask you about is I'm mad I never got to see him play. He was in Florida the year right before we got down there, but he seemed like a loose cannon from what I could tell. But you fought Arvin Atwal, man. How was it fighting him?
Yeah. I mean, when I was in South Carolina, we bickered back and forth every game. I think we even fought before we actually fought on the ice. We fought across the stanchion in overtime. And we were kind of going at it. And, I mean, I wasn't playing the overtime, so it was kind of a good trade off. So he got kicked out of the game. I got kicked out of the game, but then, you know, that fight that him and I had, it was, he kind of suckered me from behind and I just turned around and just, I mean, we went at it. I still had one glove on. I mean, almost the entire fight. But he was pretty tough. I've heard rumors about him being pretty tough. I mean, I think I did pretty well. I think we both kind of stood in there. He's in my weight class. And there's not many times where I try to go above my weight class. I mean, I can fight the tough guys. I mean, I may not win, but I can stand in there and take them. But I think my weight class is definitely right there with him.
Yeah, for sure. So now you end up in Toledo, and you know this is the place you like to call home. And I got a couple fan questions because I submitted out to the Toledo Walleye like fan club or fan page on Facebook. So we'll get to some fan questions at the end here. So what were your initial thoughts of going into Toledo? Because I've seen their arena, and man, for an ECHL team, it seems like they just pack that fucking place on the regular.
Oh yeah, always, every day. I mean, we have the best fans in the league. It's why I like playing there. You know, there's not many coast teams that are going to have a fan base like that, where you go in as, I mean, you've seen other ECHL teams. You've seen places like Tulsa or Wichita. They don't get many fans.
Right.
Even Allen. Allen doesn't get a lot of fans. But you go in there and it's packed every night. Every night. I mean, we had our two outdoor games this year, and it was crazy. I think there was like almost 13,000 fans. Cool. And that, I mean, they in that setting, there's so much open space, but you can still hear the fans. It wasn't like we were playing just outside. There was a lot of fans. And, you know, anytime anything happens, whether it's a hit, a shot, a save, the crowd's going nuts. And, you know, it makes it a lot more fun to play in front of that. And, you know, all my teammates in Toledo can attest to that. It's one of a kind. I mean, when we're on the road, it's a lot tougher than it is at home, because we have that. I mean, there are seventh man on the ice. I mean, they really bring up the spirits for all of us, regardless if we're winning or losing. I mean, they're always engaged. That place, when it's completely full, playoffs was a whole other animal. I don't think there was a single empty seat. And, you know, for all the rounds, even the finals, they were loud regardless of winning or losing, and they never lost hope. And that's something that not many teams in the minors can say that they get. But it's a hell of a time there.
Yeah, no, it seems like it. And I've followed the Toledo page for a bit there. I try to follow as many pages as I can to kind of familiarize myself with teams, and for occasions like this where I could, if they have questions for a player, I can actually interview them and ask those questions. But yeah, it seems like Toledo is always packed out. And one of the things that killed me, and I think I've talked to the guy who does it, but I just didn't know I was talking to him, but they actually throw Walleye on the ice after either like a goal, or I think it was either one of you or Mitchell Hurd's fights. A Walleye was thrown on the ice, and I about fell out of my chair laughing so hard. But that's like the pinnacle, like minor pro hockey diehard mentality, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's Robert Scott, and then there's another guy that does it too. But yeah, he brings, my wife actually got a picture with the fish before he even threw it on the ice. And they're not small walleye. Like no. these are massive walleye he's throwing on the ice. But yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I know Idaho does something like it now, or I think they've done it for a while too, but they throw a steelhead. And then, same with, Utah, they throw stuff on the ice now, but it wasn't like that when I was there. So I think that's a new thing this year. When we were there, they scored, they call it feeding the bear, and they throw a bunch of stuff too, but it's nothing compared to what like Toledo does. I mean, I think in the playoffs, they started throwing the octopus on the ice from the Red Wings.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never seen anything like it, but it was all time to say the least.
No. Yeah. Like you said, even though I'm an Everblades fan, I got to appreciate, I always just appreciate just minor pro hockey, like diehard mentality. And like you said, this walleye that they're throwing, like you got to use two hands to chuck it over. And I mean, and it's funny because old boy's a couple rows up too. It's not like he's on the glass. Yeah. He's like, could be like eight rows up at him. I mean, he's hucking this thing center ice, and it's great.
Yeah, our playoff video that they did for the playoff promo, they did a video from behind of him throwing it on the ice.
Oh, right on. That's awesome. I love that they actually embrace it too, because, you know, some arenas would be like, oh, no, don't do that. But I mean, you got to. It's like Toledo walleye.
Yeah. I mean, they embrace it, I think, but they only allow those two people who throw the fish to bring fish in. It's only those two people. Security knows who they are, and they bring them in. So they've been doing it for years, and I don't think they're ever going to stop.
Yeah, that's probably best, because I don't think if, you know, 14 people brought in walleye, cleaning up fish all over the ice ain't going to be fun.
Yeah.
Well, the fight that actually caught my eye from you at the beginning of the season, and I'm pretty sure you buckled him. I have it labeled as a TKO, but you got Tommy Apap pretty good. And it looked like one of his teammates was going to square off with you, but instead he took the fight. What was kind of going on there, and what transpired?
I mean, they were kind of just going back and forth between which one of them was going to fight me. I knew the one guy. I played with him and Allen. He's a good dude, but the two of them, they were just sitting there after I hit that guy. I mean, they were just kind of like, who's going to fight me? And then one of them said, I got him. I'm going to fight him. And then the other one was like, no, Hef, like, I got. So, and we squared up, and yeah, it was a good fight. I mean, I kind of just waited for my opportunity on when to grab and throw. I think the first one just barely missed, and the second one hit him on the button, and it dropped him for sure. I felt the whole body just drop. But, I mean, kudos to that guy. I mean, he went and played in the American League the rest of the year after, so.
Yeah, I've always said there's nothing, ain't no shame in getting dropped in a fight. Everybody gets dropped, no matter who you are.
It happened to me when I was a rookie, and Allen fought, I stepped out of the penalty box, squared up with a guy, Joshua Elves, tough guy, and he one punched me and just buckled my knees. I got back up, tried to keep fighting, but the refs they're very keen on getting in when someone gets buckled. So right.
Well, I gotta ask you about a teammate as well, and I'd heard like stories about him, because I think he was in Florida 2 years prior, 2 or 3 years.
Mitchell Hurd.
Yeah, the Toledo Bash brothers over there. I love the combo of you and Mitchell Hurd. What's it like playing alongside him?
Yeah, he's one of a kind, man. He is skilled, but he can throw. He can throw with the best of them. He's not scared of anything. You know, he's a good dude too. Like, he's a good teammate to be around. I mean, we're neighbors two doors down from each other. He's passionate about the game. And, you know, it's nice to have a teammate who's always passionate and not having to be the only guy who has to throw down. Because when you got to do it yourself, it's honestly a tough thing to do when it's just you. So it's nice to have a little bit of help there too. But he is tough. He is real tough. And, you know, I learned a few things from him this year with all that stuff, because, I mean, he's 10 years pro. So he's seen a lot. He's been through a lot. He's fought a lot of tough guys. But he gave me some tips this year, too, so I'll be using those. But he's crazy.
No, absolutely. Well, and, you know, he does the same thing. I shouldn't say the same thing, but you both kind of do it. Like, you know, after you get into a fight, you're in the home barn and, you know, you're dropping the bucket, spinning it, you're pumping the crowd up. When did that kind of start for you? Did that start in junior or was that something you started developing in pro? Because I don't think
that was only Toledo.
Oh, only Toledo. Really?
Yeah. I mean, you can't do it when you don't have any fans.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
kind of look dumb if you do it when you're on the road or away. When you have fan or don't have any fans. I mean, in juniors, we didn't get any fans.
Right.
I did it once in juniors, and then it never did it after because there was really no response. But that feeling that you get as a player after that fight, being able to control that crowd and get them going and get that momentum flowing in the building and the energy up, you know, it goes a long way. I mean, the crowd is so responsive in Toledo, especially after a fight, because, I mean, when you fight, I mean, the crowd's looking at the one and only thing going on the ice, which is the fight. And then after the fight, they're looking at their hometown guy. They're not looking at the other guy. So you can get that crowd going and that momentum shifts. I mean, if we're down and we get in one of us get in a fight and we get that crowd going, I mean, the momentum completely shifts. The crowd's going nuts and they stay nuts. And, you know, it brings our spirits up on the bench and makes it a little bit easier to get that extra step and get that step going.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's something I like to ask guys too, because some folks don't believe, you know, that fighting can swing a game, and it doesn't always work. It's not saying just because you get a fight that you're going to go out and score next shift, you know, but does that definitely play a factor for you guys on the bench for the rest of the game? You know, knowing that
Cole
Frazier
sure.
just, you know, dropped this guy and we're going to go out there and get it done.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like you said, it doesn't always work, but that's hockey. I mean, you got to try everything. I mean, regardless, I mean, if it's not your night, it's not your night. It's how it's going to be. Every team has it. But if there's one thing that you can change and that helps the momentum of the game and turns things around, whether it's a big hit, a big fight, a big goal, I mean, you're going to try to do it. It's part of the game. But for us on the bench in Toledo, I mean, when that crowd starts going, it gets all of us going.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you brought up the outdoor game earlier, and you actually had a fight in the outdoor game versus Riley McKay. What brought that fight about?
He was asking our captain to fight, kind of messing with our captain. You know, the guys play almost 1,000 games in professional hockey. So you can't do that without having to answer the bell. So, I mean, that was one of those instances where you're sticking up for your teammate and where that aspect of fighting is never going to come out of the game. I mean, you go after your skilled guy or whatever, and you're going to have to answer to someone who can. I mean, not saying that Henny can't. I mean, he doesn't need to. He's
right.
36 years old, and he's played 960-some-odd games in professional hockey. I mean, he doesn't have to do that stuff. That's not what he's here for. That's not what he was there for. I mean, he was there for to be our leader and to score goals and to make plays. And a guy like me who's there to stick up for him and protect him, that's my job. And, you know, I'm willing to do that whenever I need to.
For sure. Well, the last fight I'll ask you about before we move on, and I'll get to some of the fan questions for you, and I'll get you on your way, man. But you fought Darian Skio of Allen, and he's a tough customer. I followed him for a little bit. I had a buddy who watched him play in the dub, so he's been on my radar for a bit. But how was it fighting him? It seems like he just throws fucking hammers.
Yeah, you know, I kind of pride myself on that fight. You know, a guy who's kind of out of my weight class. He's older than me. He has more experience. He is most likely tougher. But, you know, I stood in there and I played defense. I mean, I think he hit me with one good one, but I think at the beginning of the fight, I think we both got each other with some good punches. I mean, I got him with some quick short lefts, but it was more of a defense fight for me. I mean, when you're at home, you're not really trying to always win that fight. You're trying to more or less just try not to lose it. And with a guy like that, that's someone who you don't want. I mean, that's not someone I'm going to go toe-to-toe with. That's not smart for
right.
me. I mean, that's someone who could easily knock me out and hurt me. But for myself, I think just being defensive in a fight like that, it's all about the defense and preserving yourself, because you take so many blows from that guy. I mean, there's so many opportunities for head problems. And, it's how you have a long career. You know, you want to be able, you want to be that player who's able to have that long career. And if you're sitting in there just taking blows, I mean, your career's not going to last very long. So that's a fight that I pride myself on when it comes to defensively fighting, because it was all defense for me in that fight.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, when I interviewed Chris Nyland, and, you know, if for folks listening, I encourage you to go check out some Chris Nyland clips if you're an ECHL fan and you've never seen any, but very undersized guy from Montreal, and he said the same thing. He said, I couldn't go toe-to-toe with these guys because I wouldn't have had as long of a career as I did. So it's true. You know, it's a war of attrition when it comes to hockey, not only just playoffs, but when you start fighting and you got shoulders and hands and you got to worry about your face. So I know everybody wants every single fight to be Tasker versus Sen, but it's just not going to happen.
And it's not smart.
No, it's not.
It's really not. I mean, it's great for the fans. It's great for content, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's a good way to have CTE when you're older. I mean, CTE is a big thing. And I mean, I think about it all the time. I mean, I've had my head injuries. I've had my concussions. They're not fun and they're hard to recover from. And each one you get that is after your first one, it's a longer recovery time. And, you know, I've had some buddies who have had to retire from the game because of concussions. And it's a scary thing to think about, because now you see all this stuff coming out with CTE and everything, and it's scary. You look at all these enforcers from back in the day when there wasn't information on this stuff, and you see guys all the time battling all these different sorts of mental problems when it comes to mental disorders, when it comes to depression and anxiety and drug abuse and substance abuse. You know, it's a big problem, and I think that they're doing a better job addressing it now. And it definitely makes me feel safer and me feel better about it, because if I need the help, I can get it. I mean, I'm good now, but who knows what's say 10 years down the road when all this stuff, when I retire and all this stuff settles down and starts to develop, you know? I mean, I only pray and hope that I'm good and everything's good, but it's one of those things that you got to think about and preserve yourself. That's why the defensive part of fighting is definitely a big thing.
Yeah, it's definitely important to be like a technical fighter. Like you said, you can't just go out there just swinging toe to toe every time. It's you're just not going to have a long career, and it's not good for you. At the end of the day, while I enjoy fights, I post fights. This entire podcast is dedicated to fights, but you never want to see anybody get injured or seriously struggling after hockey or anything like that. It's more so just to appreciate like what you do, man. You're going to war for your teammates, man. I mean, there's nothing more admirable than that, in my opinion. So well, you know, that kind of wraps up this year at least, and I know you're going to go back to Toledo next season, but you actually ended up in the Kelly Cup finals, and unfortunately you came up short versus Florida. But how was that experience for you, man?
I mean, it was a great experience. I didn't play after game six in the first round, just because of numbers. We got some guys back, and, coach did what he did. And, he put in the guys that we thought we were going to win it. And, with everything, I mean, everything happens for a reason. I mean, something that we're all going to learn from, something that we all really wanted. I mean, it was heartbreaking sitting in that room after game five. I mean, we were all just crushed. I mean, not many times are you going to be able to say that you're in the finals again. Who knows, it could be some guys last time. I mean, hopefully we make a run for it again this year. And I think we'll be able to do that with our coach and our staff and the guys that we're putting together again. I know that we have some returners. I know some guys have left, but, for me, it was my first playoffs. Like I said, my first year ended early because of COVID. And then my second year, I didn't make the playoff roster in Utah, but it was my first playoffs and I got those six games under my belt and learned what it was really like to play playoff hockey. It's a whole other animal. It's not regular season hockey. It's not anything like regular season hockey. It is a completely different, atmosphere. It's a completely different game. It's way faster, way harder, way more physical. And, I got to see that all the way through. And regardless of if I played or not, you know, it was a great experience and I learned a lot from it. And, I mean, it sucked not being able to be out there with my teammates, in those last series, but, you know, I learned from them watching and, seeing what it's like in the room and everything, but, hopefully we make a run for it this year and I'm in there for the whole playoffs.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, it was a great playoff series between Florida and Toledo. I got to watch it up here in North Carolina, and we were, of course, you know, going for the Everblades, but it was overall a great series, and I had a lot of fun watching it. And I seeing the Toledo fans just going crazy up there during the playoffs was pretty cool. So speaking of the fans, we'll get into some of the fan questions here, and it's just a couple, but Chris asked, what is your favorite Walleye memory so far?
You know, honestly, this whole last season, that was my favorite Walleye memory. Just regardless of the fact that we win or lose, you know, being around the boys and being around the team for as long as we were, and being able to, I got home June 20th. You know, it was a long season. You make some friendships and some memories that are going to last your whole life. You know, and being able to play with that crowd behind us and those fans, you know, that this whole season was my favorite Walleye memory. There isn't one specific thing that I could pinpoint and say, you know, this was my favorite memory. You know, the outdoor, everything from game one to the outdoor games to the last game of the season to playoffs, you know, every single thing played a part in me thinking that this season was like the best season ever, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Minus not being able to come out with a victory.
Right. Well, Keith asks, so he says, on the last second shot against Fort Wayne, was the shot one of the best, most accurate in his career, or did you just throw it at the net?
I just threw it at the net. You know, it was there was 0.6 seconds left or something like that on the clock. You know, the puck was just there. I mean, I figured I'd throw a prayer up. I mean, it's kind of like a Hail Mary. I just shot it up the net and it went in. You know, that was a big game for all of us. You know, Henny scoring with a minute and a half left, and then that happening as well. You know, it was a big game, and I think the Fort Wayne coach even lost a little bit. I think the fan got a souvenir from him. I think they got a broken clipboard.
There you go. So Kyle asked, well, he asked, how does Toledo compare to other fan bases? And I think we've covered that. He also asked, what do you like to do around town, in your downtime around Toledo?
My wife's there with me and my dogs. And, so, I mean, whenever we can get them out running around, I think that's kind of like, I like being able to do some stuff with my wife and my dogs. With the boys, when it comes to the boys, I mean, we like going golfing when we can. I mean, golf season's short, just like it is up in Canada. You know, there's only a certain amount of time that you can golf before it gets too cold. But, you know, I think that's kind of what we like to do. I mean, we'll get together as teammates. We all live in the same complex, so it's easy to get together. And then same with golf. I mean, we'll go golfing when we can, but a lot of the times we're just at the rink. I mean, the rink is such a good spot for all of us. It's got everything we need. I mean, it's got a gym, it's got a sauna. I mean, we got ping pong, we have table hockey, got everything there. And as a team, that's kind of like what we like to do, you know, hang out there, go back to the apartments, hang out there, go golfing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, man, I think that's it for the questions. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and give us a little inside info on your career and what it's like fighting some of these guys and how it is playing out in Toledo, man. It's a great time.
Yeah, of course. It was a pleasure coming on the podcast, getting to talk, and, you know, we can do this again sometime, maybe after the season's done, and catch up about how this last season went.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, take it easy. I appreciate you again.
Yeah, you too, of course. You too.